did at the Tyler Youth Conference Salt and Light back in the early part of August on Quiet My Anxious Heart. And I'm just going to jump right back in here to Philippians chapter 4. I'm going to read the verses 6 through 13. Philippians 4, verses 6 through 13. Be careful for nothing, but in everything, by prayer and supplication with thanksgiving, let your requests be made known unto God. And the peace of God, which passeth all understanding, shall keep your hearts and minds through Christ Jesus. Finally, brethren, whatsoever things are true, whatsoever things are honest, whatsoever things are just, whatsoever things are pure, whatsoever things are lovely, whatsoever things are of good report, if there be any virtue, and if there be any praise, think on these things. Those things which ye have both learned and received and heard and seen in me, do, and the God of peace shall be with you. But I rejoice in the Lord greatly that now at the last your care of me hath flourished again, wherein you were also careful, but ye lacked opportunity. Not that I speak in respect of want, for I have learned in whatsoever state I am therewith to be content. I know both how to be abased, and I know how to abound. Everywhere and in all things I am instructed both to be full and to be hungry, both to abound and to suffer need. I can do all things through Christ, which strengtheneth me. Now, it's not my intentions to rehash everything that we said last Wednesday night, but I do want to rehash this. I want to remind you that when I finish this, probably take one more Wednesday after this, when I finish this, then Brother Lewis will come up right behind me, and we'll take the same text, and we'll preach on the same topic, and it will be slightly different. It will be on the same page, but slightly different. So my goal on an issue that, as we talked about last time, can be really complex and really difficult and can have varied factors and varied circumstances, my goal is to not be comprehensive, but to speak truth to one central area on this topic, and that is the area of what anxiety is often saying about our hearts, what we need to learn about ourselves, and what we need to learn about God. Now, we could take the word anxiety, and in fact, we did last week, and we can put a lot of different words in its place, words that might be closely related, and words that might be just sort of indirectly related, things that we might not think of as being related at all, things like anger, and we can see that there are some real commonalities. And so the point of that is to say this: we are all, we're not really snowflakes. In some ways we are, but we are unique. We're all made in the image of God. We are all image bearers of God. We are all purposely created by God in our own unique way. But what I mean by that is that as human beings, there is no temptation taken you but such as is common to man. Most of the things that we struggle with have a great connection. There are things that are very common about us. And so though it may manifest itself in different ways, we're going to see tonight, most of these things are most of the issues of life, or all the issues of life, come from the heart. The heart is always involved. I want to remind you of this as well. The whole goal here, this is not a self-help talk that could be held at a Mormon church, Mormon tabernacle, or a civic club, or some other religious place, or a church building. This is not a self-help talk. This is not the goal of this is not to fix your anxiety. But the goal of all of this, the goal of this message, the goal that Paul has here, the goal of our lives, whether we are individuals who may have a disposition with which that we struggle with anxious feelings for all of life, the goal is faith in Jesus Christ. It's like we read Sunday from 1 Peter chapter 1, where Peter talks about being under this intense trial, the trial of your faith that is like fire, in that it burns, in that it is unpleasant, in that no one would rightfully wish it to be. But this trial can become precious to us when we understand that it is God, that God is not absent from the trial. God is not absent from our anxiety. Our anxiety or these other emotions, our anxiety is not saying nothing, but God is speaking to us through this. And the goal is, according to Peter, is that we might be found full of praise and honor and glory at the appearing of Jesus Christ. Paul said it this way in Philippians 1, God, I just want you to be magnified in my body. I want you to be seen as being great through the things that I experience. And so, Lord, I want to learn to trust you. I want to learn to honor you. And I want to, my greatest goal is that whatever I experience in life might be produced in a praiseworthy manner, in a way that brings honor and glory when Christ appears. This is a long-term process. Now, I said at the end of the message last Wednesday night that maybe the most important word in this passage is the word learned. I love the fact that Paul does not stand at a lecture stand as some professor who's removed from the experience. But Paul, in this letter in particular, but really in all of his writing, Paul, he shares his heart, doesn't he? He opens himself up personally. And we can see evidence from Paul's life that he was not one who was just a stoic, strong person void of anxious thought and anxious feeling. His whole time before his conversion was this frenzied, anxiety-filled, really obsessive, relentless effort to rid the world of what he saw to be a great danger. He gave himself to this, and even after his conversion, Paul would express these things like, I am despairing of life. And I would have despaired of life if God had not brought me through this. And maybe to see what he was working, as we'll see maybe next Wednesday night. He's the one who said, I'm perplexed. I am cast down. And so Paul was not a man who was removed from the realities of life, but Paul was a man who was right in the middle of the reality of life. And Paul would say, as he sort of gives himself as a model to these Philippian people, as he commands them to don't be full of cares. And then later he says, and the things that you have seen in me, do. And then he says, I have learned in whatsoever state I am therewith, to be content. And so, brothers and sisters, God is our shepherd. He is our teacher. I love the song that Sister Ann called out tonight. Lord, break the bread of life. Open the bread of life. In other words, teach me. Teach me, Lord, from your word. And God is faithful to do that. One of my favorite parables is the parable of the mustard seed. Because the kingdom of heaven, which is as small as what God is doing in me. And it's bigger than that, of course. But the kingdom of heaven there is likened unto the tiniest of seeds. He chooses this imagery of the mustard seed on purpose. It's the tiniest of seeds, which is cast into the ground and would seem to be forgotten and smashed and buried forever. But God is working. And God knows that mustard seed. And God has given life to that mustard seed. And eventually it grows. It grows and it becomes this strong tree. In Matthew 13 it says that the birds of the air come to rest, to find support, to find strength in its branches. That's a good goal, isn't it? Lord, I want to be found into praise. I want to be found as one who learns to trust you, who learns to walk with you. And so Paul says, I have learned how to be content. Now, Paul in this passage teaches us that we need to learn not only about God, and we'll learn some things about God this passage next Wednesday night, but anxiety also would tell us that we need to learn some things about ourselves. So turn to verse 7, and you're going to see where it is that we need to learn about ourselves. Verse 7, and the peace of God, which passeth all understanding, shall keep your hearts and minds through Christ Jesus. So where is this battle with full care? Where is this battle with anxiety fought? Where is the arena in which we need to understand and labor? And he says, the issue is your hearts and your minds. God must keep your hearts and your minds. Now, this is not something that is unique to Paul's writing in Philippians 4. In Proverbs 4:23, probably you memorized this in school if you went to RCS, or you know this passage well. Proverbs 4:23 says, keep thy heart, keep your heart with all diligence. Give all diligence to keep your heart. I believe Brother Brady Thompson preached on that verse here at Ripley or maybe at Providence this past summer. Keep thy heart with all diligence, for out of it are the issues of life. So everything in life, what we think, what we do, how we process, how we respond, how we react, everything in life issues forth. The source is our heart. The heart is the beginning place, the starting place, the source of all the things that come out of our life. Now, Jesus helps us to sort of narrow in on the heart, and there's been plenty of messages that you've heard from this pulpit, Brother Lewis or myself, on the topic of the heart. So just for sort of simple definition's sake, let's just say that the heart is the place. It's the center of our being. It's the center of our affections. It's where our affections find their source. The center of our desires. The center of what we believe. Out of the heart are all the issues of life. What we believe, what we love, what we think comes from the heart. And of course, the mind is very closely connected to our heart, right? Because you can't have a heart without a mind. There's no ability to have an affection without some sort of way to process that affection, to desire that affection. So let me just say this. If we don't have a sure anchor for our minds, and you know this to be true, right? We can convince ourselves of anything. Sometimes the anxieties of our life are over real things. But let me speak from personal experience. Confess this to Brother Lewis. We've had some really beneficial times together. I wouldn't trade them for the world. But our least beneficial times have been when we were in a crisis. And preparing for that crisis, we began to speculate as to what might could occur. And my goodness, that can scare you. If we don't have some sure anchor for our minds, we can be convinced of anything. So what is it that anxiety is saying? And it's just at its most basic, simple expression. I want something, and I might not get it. Right? Is that not it? Is that not true of every anxious thought, of every probably angry thought, every stressed out thought? I want something that I might not get, or I don't want something, and I am afraid that I will get it. Now, if you turn to Matthew chapter 6, where Jesus helps us to sort of narrow in on the heart, Matthew 6, there are really three things about our hearts that Jesus lays bare. And so if you're taking notes, you might write down three things I need to learn about my heart. I want to say again, this is not just for the person who knows themselves to be anxious. This is common to all of us. Our hearts are not different by nature. At the heart, this is where we are without the knowledge of Christ Jesus. Jesus says in Matthew 6, verse 21, for where your treasure is, there will your heart be also. Then in verse 24, no man can serve two masters, for either he will hate the one and love the other, or else he will hold to the one and despise the other. You cannot serve God and mammon. So where your treasure is, there will your heart be also. So I wrote this down. I think I probably copied it from somebody else. I don't remember who it was right now. But let me just say this. I think it's a very true statement. Fear and worry are not just emotions. They don't just mean nothing. But they are the expression of what we hold dear, of where our true loyalties rise. That's what Jesus is saying. For where your treasure is, because Jesus is about to go right into this discussion on anxious thoughts, care-filled thoughts, care-filled minds. For where your treasure is, there will your heart be also. Our hearts express through anxious emoting, our hearts express where our true treasures lie. Now it's easy to pass that verse very quickly. We know Matthew 6:21 very well. Where your treasure is, there will your heart be also. But that's not usually the way we identify things, is it? Think about the importance of a treasure. Now, somebody broke into my car and stole $5, I would be really irritated. But it would be a good story for a couple of weeks. This town's going to pot, right? But if somebody broke into the bank and stole my retirement, that would be an entirely different matter, wouldn't it? Because now it's not just the irritation and the temporary. This is the treasure. This is what I'm banking on to take care of me when I'm too old to work and too old to provide for myself. That would be a disaster, right? That's the treasure. So the treasure is that which we think that we absolutely must have. It's the highest. It's the most important. It is the essential. And so it's true. What we think that we must have. I must have this. What we think we must have tends to control us. We work hardest for that which we must have. We protect most carefully that which we are convinced that we must have. We worry most about losing that which we think we must have. But the problem is, what we think we must have is really just what we desire. It's not actually what we must have, but it's what we most desire. And this is where things get dicey. This is where things get scary. This is where things drive us to anxiety. And I don't just mean, as you're reading here in verse 24, you're reading about no man can serve two masters, for either he will hate the one and love the other, else he will hold the one and despise the other. You cannot serve God and mammon. We think about money and God, and the person who just gives themselves to money is and forsakes God is a greedy, ugly creature. So we think of these as being polar opposites. You have a really bad person here and a really good person here. The one who's serving God is a really good person. The one who's serving mammon is a really bad and ugly person. And so it's sometimes difficult to relate this to our own experience in our own lives. Brothers and sisters, we begin to think about the things that are our treasures, that tend to be our treasures. We think about things like this. We think about things like health. Right? We think about things like unified churches, things like freedom, a free country, godly communities, close, loving families. Now, the thing about all those is that those are all good desires. Those are all profitable things that we should be working for. But when we find, or let me ask you it this way, what if we don't get any of those? All I want is health. Well, what if your health is taken away? What if we lose all of those? What if you don't get to have one or two of those really good things? You see, what we find about ourselves is, again, my greatest interest at heart, without Christ, my greatest interest is what I think that I need. So we tend to build our kingdoms with our perception of our needs. And when those needs, when those things that we value, the things that we treasure are threatened, when we think they might slip away from us, we tend to show that, don't we, through anger or worry, fear. This passage is a wonderful passage, but isn't it a challenging passage? It's challenging, right? I would be a fool to stand before you and say, you need to stop thinking about your health. That's not true. Remember, Philippians 4, these are good thoughts. It's not wrong. It's not wrong to desire health. It's not wrong to desire a happy marriage. It's not wrong to desire a free country. Those are great desires, prayers that should be. Remember, he says, pray for these things. Instead of being full of care, bring them to God. Make your supplications and requests made known before God with thanksgiving. So bring these things to God. But when they become more than just requests, when they become the things that we value the very most, I must have this, and if I don't have this, I will not be satisfied. Now, again, we would never say that in that language, but that's exactly what is reflected in our hearts. We find that, as I think Brother Lewis preached a while back, we tend to live with competing kingdoms, right? My kingdom and God's kingdom. So, anxiety teaches us that I need to be brought face to face with the reality of where my heart is, what my greatest desires are. Now, stay in Matthew chapter 6. And let's look at verse 25. Therefore, I say unto you, take no thought for your life, what ye shall eat or what ye shall drink, nor yet for your body, what ye shall put on. Is not the life more than meat, and the body than raiment? Move on to verse 31. Therefore take no thought, saying, what shall we eat, or what shall we drink, or wherewithal shall we be clothed? For after all these things do the Gentiles think. I said earlier that what we think we need begins to control us. And ultimately, I think this may be the most common and central part of this issue is the issue of control. I've read some statements on that board that you can see there right now that are true statements. And they are pretty hard-hitting. And they're pretty hard to come to grips with. But I think if we're honest before God, we have to confess these to be true. I may have told this story here. I don't know if I did or not. It keeps coming back to my mind. I don't think I'm always an anxious person, but I certainly struggle with anxiety at times. And I remember a night where I just could not sleep. This is a few months ago. I could not sleep. And I could not stop thinking. And I'll tell you what it was. I was driving back from a Collierville meeting. It was in April, I think. I'm at my Collierville meeting, and when I got to Hickory Flats, about 10 miles from home, got to Hickory Flat, I realized that my temperature gauge was on hot. But it was 10 o'clock, and Hickory Flats, I'm not going to stop there, and I thought, I can make it home. I bet you if I turn the air conditioner off and all the windows down, it'll go back to cool, and I'll be fine. And so I did it. The temperature gauge didn't change at all. But I said, well, I can't stop now. It's just 5 miles from home. And now I'm 3 miles from home. So I pulled into the house, and I turned the car off, and then it hit me. You are an idiot. What did you just do? You probably just ruined your engine driving it hot that far. And then I found out the lawnmower had broken down again that day. So I went to bed, and I could not sleep. I moved from bed to bed to bed to bed to bed. Finally back to the first bed. And about 3 in the morning, it hit me. You know what your problem is? It's not that your car broke down, and it's not that your lawnmower broke down. These are minor things. You have 2 other cars to drive tomorrow. It's not going to slow you down one bit from your plans. But your problem is that you're not in control of tomorrow now. You had a plan. I had a plan. I was going to do this from 7 to 9 and this from 9 to 11 and on and on. And now I've got to make some different plans. I've got to call the mechanic, and I've got to take the lawnmower in. I've got to go borrow Lewis's trailer. I've got to do this, got to do that. And I'm not in charge of my plans. And it drives me crazy to not be able to manage my life the way I want to manage my life. It makes drive me crazy to not be able to do what I want to do and make sure that what I want to do happens. And so when we are in anxious mindsets, ultimately, it comes down to a battle of control. What we want to control, what I want to control, versus what God has given me to control. God has not given me the control over my circumstances. He hasn't given it to me. But God has, think about that. He hasn't given me the control over ultimately my health, over whether my children will have soft skills or not. I mean, I've got some control there. So at least while they're here. But most of the circumstances of my life are beyond my control. But what God has given me control of through grace, through His Spirit, and giving us the mind of Christ and the ability to think like Christ, whatever you think, God has given me the ability to control my own mind and to turn it towards the supremacy of Jesus Christ in my life. You ever need answers? Does it drive you crazy sometimes that you can't know the future? Here's another one. At our hearts without Christ, we are not convinced. Think about this. We are not convinced that God is completely trustworthy. Are you? Well, sure, I'm convinced God is trustworthy. Well, why is it then that when things go differently, or you think they might go differently, when you think you might not get what you want, or you think you might get what you don't want, why is it then that we tend to crumble? When we talk about a God who works all things according to the counsel of His own will, and then we crumble, it's evidence that we are not fully convinced that God is trustworthy, or at least that we are not willing to put all of our eggs in one basket. That's really the truth, right? I trust God for salvation. I trust God for time. But God, what were you thinking? Let my car break down, right? Or maybe it's that we don't like how God manages the universe. Let's move along. It's time to close. But I will read that last statement. We would like to be in the driver's seat because we trust ourselves more than we trust God. So then the third thing that he identifies about our hearts here in Matthew 6, look at verse 19, the idea of vulnerability and danger. When we value things that we may not get and we're not in control of being able to provide them, it creates the sensation, it creates the thought in our minds that we are vulnerable, we are in danger. Listen to verse 19. Lay not up for yourselves treasures upon earth where moth and rust doth corrupt and where thieves break through and steal. But lay up for yourselves treasures in heaven where neither moth nor rust doth corrupt and where thieves do not break through nor steal. Verse 19 is the very picture of vulnerability, isn't it? Moth and rust ultimately corrupt everything. There is no completely airtight, safe place. That's a threatening. That reality is a scary thought, isn't it? There is no time. There is no way that you can absolutely guarantee that your child will make it safely back from school when you're not with them in the car. If you're with them in the car, there's still no guarantee that your child will safely make it back from school. And I need them to make it back from school. If they don't make it back from school, I cannot go on. I cannot make it. You see, these all work together. What we believe we must have, what we value the highest, our treasure, and the reality that we're not in control of providing that or keeping that, leads to this expression of vulnerability, which either, like we said last time, either expresses itself in this, we say the warped fight syndrome of just an obsessive, restless desire and effort to control life, or the opposite, which is just the flight, just a sense of doom and gloom and darkness and just paralysis. Now, that's not pleasant to think about, brothers and sisters. It's not. It's not pleasant for me to think that, Isaac, sometimes you don't like how God manages the universe. Sometimes you would rather trust yourself than trust God. I hate that thought. I hate that I would do that. But oh, how helpful it is when God breaks the bread of life to me and shows me that. And then thank God Philippians 4 doesn't just leave us there. We've got to move on for time's sake. We'll get back to Wednesday night. But what Philippians 4 does is Philippians 4 presents a God who steps into all those voids, all those areas of need, not as a God who would rebuke and say, I told you so, but as a faithful shepherd who has promised to keep, who has promised to guard, and who has promised to be with his children. Ultimately, y'all, this is important tonight because the heart is deceitful above all things and confused at times. This is important, but this information on its own is not very helpful, is it? This drives you to despair. The information truly grabs our hearts and turns us in a new direction is a walk with God, is learning about Him. Not just learning about Him as a subject, but learning about Him as we walk in Him. As He actually keeps us, He actually guards us, and actually protects us, and actually is with us. So we'll look at that next Wednesday night, Lord willing. Thank you for listening to this message. Our prayer is that you've been blessed by the messages and the daily devotional blog on sermon audio from Ripley Primitive Baptist Church. We would love the opportunity to be of greater service to you and your walk with Christ. In other words, we would like to get to know you better. Do you have need of counsel, of a home church, or can we just pray for you? Please feel free to contact us by phone at 662-837-8590 or visit our website at www.ripleypbc.com.